Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we're discussing the movie Watchmen 1 minute at a time. I'm Eric Nash.
I'm Travis Bow from the Real Comic Heroes Podcast.
And I'm Jerry Porter from the Indiana Jones Minute.
Oh, back again, huh, Jerry?
How's it going? Back again, yes.
You just couldn't help yourself.
No. Not on this minute. You know, by the way, you guys, Tom and Pete warned me. They're like, oh my God, you actually have like the most violent, crazy, you know, like rape scene minutes of this movie. Like, good luck with that. We're so glad we actually aren't involved in those minutes. And I had no idea what they're talking about. I was like, what do I have now? What?
Oh,
well,
man.
I got it. Like, what's Watchmen about? This? Yeah, I thought this was about volcanoes and sharks. Something. Yeah. So I now see why they're so happy.
Yeah.
They avoided minute 40.
Well.
Okay, so this is minute 40, where it starts with Eddie watching Sally get undressed. And ends with Eddie throwing Sally against the pool table. Yeah, we spelled that out.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Well, one thing I noticed is at the very beginning, again, we see Sally and she's upset. You know, she's like, Eddie, what are you doing here? You knew I was getting undressed. And again, behind her are all these trophies.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, in the background again. So, I don't know. Great attention to detail there.
Sure. And that's kind of like throughout this space, it's like their headquarters and it's like their trophy collection and there's stuff like that all throughout this place. But yeah, the thing I noted like right off kind of off the bat with this minute is when she looks away after saying, you know, you knew I was changing, the look on her face really tells a story. Like she sells the idea that she's no stranger to kind of dealing with men in, you know, maybe not similar situations as this, but you know, she's had to tell, you know, other men to back off or had unwanted advances, you know, that she's had to deal with. So it to me, it's like, and I don't know if it's the Carla Gugino using personal experiences to inform that type of performance, but I think she does a fantastic job of really selling that idea.
Well, she has this amazing neck acting.
Oh, yeah.
The arteries,
yeah.
What have you.
Yeah. Wow. Well, yet she now, do you guys think that she may have been expecting Eddie to be there? Like, is she... I'm not saying she wanted him to be
sure.
There, but was she expecting him to be there? The look that's on her face and when she says, well, you know, what are you doing here, Eddie? Like she is contemplating something.
Hmm.
And I'm wondering, it's like she's surprised, but maybe just sort of surprised 50%.
Right.
Or maybe just irked, like, oh, you know, again, or
right.
Really, or
yeah.
Is it one of, like, I thought this might happen. I told him just in the hallway, like, you go on ahead without me.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
And she is contemplating something here. And Eddie just did, you know, in the previous minute, he says something to her. I don't know what he says, but she kind of, it's like he's flirting or maybe a come on or something. And she goes, oh, Eddie, like, stop
yeah.
It. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I so imagine he says something vulgar or something, you know, along these lines of, you know, I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah, something inappropriate after the superhero photo shoot.
There, yeah.
That, I mean, let's be honest, they're at the office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, it's a tough scene to watch, you know, and it's like he's revolting in this scene, and you can't even say it's like things were different back then or, you know, because this kind of shit still happens, you know. But on one hand, it's an amazing scene to watch because of these two actors. You know, I think
yeah.
They handle the scene brilliantly. I kind of looked into some of the the filming of this scene and tried to find out, like, how did they handle that? And I guess Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who, you know, obviously plays comedian here, was, I guess, interviewed by MTV.com. And this was, I think, around the time, might have been before the movie came out. And it was, he says, it was a 3-day process shooting that particular scene. It was hard. And it was 3 of the hardest days of filming I've ever had to do. It was really very violent. So,
yeah. You know, watching the scene, you know, of course, you're like, it is shocking and very violent.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is as I watched the rest of the movie and I got, you know, I finished the movie, it's like the darkness and the violence made more sense. Like, this is a no nonsense movie that doesn't really pull punches on some of these bigger questions, and they, you know, the darkness is right in there. They're in the thick of that. You know what I mean? They're like, no, there are real problems in the world, and right. Here they are.
Yeah.
They're not really pulling any punches.
Sure,
I mean,
yeah.
In this scene, it's not something that's, you know, it's visceral and difficult to watch. And I'm not surprised to hear it's difficult to film.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or difficult for the actors.
I can't imagine dealing with the same, you know, material for 3 days or, you know, for
sure
having to reshoot and, like, even just it's so gross when he, you know, approaches her obviously from behind and starts to, like, kiss her neck and everything. Like, it's so creepy. And
he's like licking his lips on the one of the, when he approaches it, it's really nasty and gnarly. So, and he says sort of that, you know, one of those typical lines,
sure.
You got to have some kind of reason for dressing in an outfit like this.
Right.
You know, no spelled Y-E-S.
It's the, come on, baby. I know what you need.
Yeah.
That line always just makes my skin crawl. But again, it's a weird character because at different times of the movie, you really like the comedian, you know? He's got this, in other scenes, obviously, he's got this charm that it's inescapable. But
boy, yeah, of course he has a magnetism. I mean, he's a superhero, right? Or I don't know what is the term for a guy like the comedian. I mean, because you're not going to call him a hero.
Sure,
he's, you know, but like super villain doesn't. You're like
right.
A super immoral hero.
Anti-hero.
Anti-hero, yeah, I get a villain, maybe a villain. I mean, he does a whole bunch of bad shit.
He's a real son of a bitch.
Yeah. I don't even know. I mean, I don't even know. I don't know. Why is he a superhero?
Yeah.
Well, what we've seen in some of the civilian reaction to in these riots and what have you, you know, these signs that they're carrying and a little bit maybe actually verbalizing too. But masks is the general term that is used throughout the book and the movie for these superheroes. And you know, you're making the point last minute. I mean, you kind of realized, or you kind of came across to me that I think you realized, you know, Dr. Manhattan is the only one that's really a superhero. Now, Travis and I, we've been are discussing of this for weeks now. He brings up he's coined the term, I think, maybe the hyperrealism of the heroes and how they almost seem that, like, they have a little something of super normal qualities, abilities,
strength, and
right, but that's, you know, in trying to make it more realistic. Think about it more realistically. It's, you know, I like to kind of forget about those things and keep them more grounded in my mind as I'm watching.
Well, you know, Pete Mummert told me that Rorschach was the only one he actually found to be likable. Is that true for you guys?
Going through this, Rorschach has lost a lot of his appeal for me. He's obviously he's one of the more interesting characters, he talks about his who he thinks is immoral. You know, he talks about these characters from the past. You know, one of the Minutemen, you know, Silhouette, and how she was leading an indecent lifestyle because she had a girlfriend and lived with her girlfriend. So Rorschach deemed her to be living in an indecent lifestyle. So you find out like Rorschach is also just has no tolerance for things like that. So
well, that was his whole thing, right? I mean, even up to the very end, he's uncompromising,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meaning if you disagree with him, you know, there isn't, you're not going to persuade him.
Yeah. It's black
although
and white.
The one, yeah, it's black and white, and pardon the pun there with his face.
Sure.
But you know, he does have that minute, where he and it's Dan.
Yeah.
Right. And he like apologizes mm-hmm. to Rorschach, yeah. and he's like, you're a good friend, you know, and Rorschach comes over and shakes his hand. And for some reason, it's like he's not compromising there, you know, but he's I don't know. He's softer there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in that scene, which is a great scene too.
Sure.
But he's kind of like he admits that he can be very difficult. Yeah. And you're like, "Well, that's probably him, you know, as close you're going to get him to bend on anything, you know."
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly the word I had in my head. I was letting you kind of come to it. He's admitting that the thing you said as well, but also I think, you know, that there's some, you know, some reason to have a good friend, to you know, be friendly with someone at least, at least one person.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things when Eddie says, you know, you got to have some kind of reason for, you know, dressing in an outfit like this. It did bring up a good question, I guess, one that I hadn't really considered because I'm, you know, don't live in the world of superheroes and comics very often, not that much. And so I did think for a minute, I was like, you know, all these superhero females are always dressed provocatively and they're sexualized. You know what I mean? Like, now I just see like, oh, hey, it's Firestarter. She's good with fire when, you know, whatever. But when I see like, I'm not really, you know, I'm wondering like, where's the superhero who's covered head to toe in like this formless muumuu? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where, you know, where's the puritanical super superhero? Yeah. And of course, you know, is that true about the men too? You know, where's Schlubby Man?
Mm. Sure.
Guy's just dressed in like kind of fat baggy chinos.
Yeah.
It's like wearing a big oversized sweater. It's just I guess they don't
stain
exist
on it.
Yeah, exactly. So it, you know, you wonder is that part of the allure? Is this I guess they're all sexualized? I'm sure this has been discussed ad nauseum somewhere.
Sure.
Well,
sure,
there are comics even that have had heroes in them that are. I don't know that I can specifically think of one that has muumuus, but definitely ones that have some ugly, you know, not changeable and changeable appearances.
Well, I think about like the Thing, right?
Yeah.
Isn't he all like a bunch of gold bricks or something? A bunch of tan bricks.
Yeah.
You're like, I guess I don't really find that sexy, or I wouldn't necessarily find that sexy. You know, I mean, yeah, maybe if you're into that. But he was like the only guy I could think of, even the Incredible Hulk, who's green, and kind of, you like, he sort of has this virility to him. He's like yeah. Everything's bursting out of everything else. mean, his pants are like barely on him.
Yeah. Anytime I think of the thing, and you know, I my mind immediately goes to the scene in Mallrats where Brody's grilling Stan Lee about, you know, whether or not the thing has you know, rocky orange genitals.
A thing. Yeah. Like boulders. Yeah. Like are his nuts square too?
Right.
I mean, I guess, yeah, the comedian, you know, yeah, it's yeah, it's a crazy line.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to know, Jerry, what, since you're kind of the, you know, you're from Indiana Jones Minute, and that makes you the authority on pugilism. So I think it's a great punch that Sally delivers to Eddie, and I want to know how you'd rate it.
Oh, it's a fantastic punch. I give that a 10.
Nice.
And you know what I love about it is, you know, she really slugs him.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, there's like a bit of the, you know, kind of like a verbal warning finger. She's like, now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Eddie.
Yeah. Now. I mean, she just wallops him.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, now. And I feel like, okay, so in the superhero world, it's like, listen, the first broken nose is a warning shot.
Yeah,
it's like, hey, back up. You know?
I read it as like, let's call it even. You were being a dick and you got punched. So, you know, let's go join the others before this gets worse. So,
yeah, don't make me have to break your other nose.
Yeah.
that's enough of, you know, the admonishment, chastisement. Yeah. You're out of line.
Yeah. And so I can't, it's hard to know what, like, obviously Eddie wasn't intending to start hitting her and all that. I mean, that's he wanted this to go a different way, but once she punches him, I think that sent him over the edge, and it's the laugh that really is really disturbing, because it's not like he absentmindedly or just reactively hits her. Like he could walk away, but he decides to start working on her, you know, hitting her and kicking her and all that. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, he takes a sinister pleasure in the violence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clear. You know, like, he doesn't just kind of, slug her back and say, like, you know, kind of like, be that way, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It could have been he walks out, or he hits her once or twice or something. And then they very specifically show, you're like, no, this guy's taking pleasure in inflicting the pain and the beating and the violence of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are some slugs and hits that are, you know, gratuitous or just for the sake of, for Eddie's own pleasure there.
Yeah. It's, I guess if he gets pleasure from this, is it like, well, I wanted a different kind of pleasure, but I'll settle for this. So either way, I'm going to get what I want.
Does this part of it just strike you as just a huge power struggle? Is it not a struggle, really?
I mean,
just like him just, you know, as he said, wanting what he wants, and he's, just even the way that it's shot, I think there's like an above angle, you know.
Sure, yeah.
The camera's above him looking down and that sort of thing. What I notice is Eddie's first punch is to Sally's stomach.
Yeah, oh, it's horrible.
And you're like, so is that sort of foreshadowing the pregnancy?
Could be. I've never thought about it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little heavy.
Sure.
I understand.
Sure.
But I was interesting. That's the first one. And then, you know, she gets pregnant, and they show her face, and she's like, I mean, she's like, oh my God, this is going to be horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, they show her kind of like they show her doubled over, but something's occurred to her too. She has like a split second where she's again, in, you know, like something, you know, just hit her. She's thinking about this, like, oh fuck.
Right. It's a heavy. Yeah, it's heavy.
It is. When, you know, the pool balls go from perfectly racked up, right? And then Eddie kind of throws her against the pool table, and the pool balls just scatter.
Yeah,
in its own violent and chaotic way.
Yeah. And back to what Eric was talking about, I think last minute, like the Foley work there, like it sounds, you can feel the impact, you know, because you know what it's like to break, you know, a pool, you know, the rack, break, to shoot pool, and you know the amount of like force that you have to put into it to make those balls kind of react that way. So the way she gets slammed into that table, it's like you can, again, going back to the sound, like you can just feel it, you know.
Well, and in that scene, again, which is kind of a filmed from above a little bit, you see that Eddie still has a superhero outfit on, right? Sure. And she's wearing, you know, just her undergarments, right. and she has no yellow. She's dressed just completely in black. And, I mean, she's vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, he's still got like his superhero everything on. She's just, you know, kind of stripped.
Yeah. Going back to, I was, like I was talking about earlier, looking up kind of how they filmed this and kind of what the actors were kind of thinking of. And there's an article on WatchmenComicMovie.com, and then they talked to Carla Gugino at Comic-Con of that year, might have been in 2008, and they were asking her about this scene and everything, and asking her with the brutality of how it begins, like, how does she have a fondness for him later in life or after this and everything, and she says it's real fascinating, and that's what I love about human beings and what I love about acting. You get to get inside somebody else's mind and somebody else's experience. You know, we are complicated people on this planet. There is no black and white. Everything is gray. We're all capable of everything. And she goes on to say that they were talking about, you know, because the rape in the graphic novel was so brutal – and Zack Snyder said, are you going to be okay with the fact that I want this to be really brutal? It's not sexy. It's awful. And she said, yes, because it has to be that. That's intrinsic to the nature of it. So,
well, yeah. They're showing that, unfortunately, this sort of violence and evil is in life. And it's, again, they're not pulling any punches here. This is it. And it's this bad.
Yeah.
And it can be committed by the people that you think are supposed to help.
Yeah, people that you trust.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think and to jump ahead quite a bit, you know, the reason for me to that this scene is in here is so that we get the moment between Dr. Manhattan and Lori later on Mars, where he talks about this awful thing that happens, and out of that comes, you know, I won't say what comes from this moment, but the way that Manhattan like has like that's what changes his mind. Like, that's a really powerful scene for me. It's one of my favorite kind of moments, and that's kind of how I try to view this, I guess, this scene in that way, I guess, like, something comes from this. Doesn't make it okay, but it's, you know.
The thing that I think about that also comes from this is, and it makes me not feel so bad about it, is the beating that comedian takes at the beginning.
Sure.
And with his death.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
If only Rorschach knew about this scene.
Sure.
Which I would have to say he probably never does.
Yeah. Is that going to pretty much do it for... I think we've, I mean, I've exhausted my notes. I don't know about you guys.
Sure. I mean, it's interesting. I wonder if that, you know, when you think about out of such violence comes as what, well, what you didn't say, but what Dr. Manhattan says, right? And you think from a sort of a Western religious point of view, I mean, that might be how some Christians view something like the crucifixion. Mm-hmm. You have this violent, you know, this violent, terrible thing, but out of that comes something else.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a.
They use that word, you know. I don't know. They talk about miracles.
Sure.
And you're like, huh? I wonder if that's floating around back there, sort of. Maybe not for Dr. Manhattan necessarily, but sure. I just mean sort of the philosophy of some of these things, evil and light and goodness and that yeah. sort of thing. You know, what turns people, what changes people, what causes them to think, causes them to stop, reconsider things.
Yeah. That's I think we've all got something to think about over the weekend before we come back to see if, you know, maybe we'll find out if Eddie, you know, sinks any of those pool balls. I mean, maybe he.
Yeah. What? Start your Monday off. Yeah, I wonder who's gonna get the next wonderful minutes.
Oh. Well, I will jump into our script differences for this whole week. There's not a ton because we kind of, you know, it goes from the funeral or the cemetery, and then. It kind of cuts back and forth between the cemetery and the conversation between Lori and Sally, and it says the old folks' home that Sally lives in is called Nepenthe Vista, and I looked up Nepenthe, and it's from the book Watchmen, and it means in like ancient Greek, it's Nepenthe is a fictional like cure for anti-sorrow or so it's but the scene between Lori and her mother takes place like out by the pool instead of inside in her living room, and then in the book it's like in Sally's bedroom. There's a kind of another callback to an earlier scene in the newspaper. The headline says Dr. Manhattan intercepts terrorists at port, which is a scene that we kind of saw earlier where Dr. Manhattan left a conversation to go deal with some terrorists, but that was cut out of the movie, obviously. There's no it jumps between funeral, like I said, and this conversation. So like we'll hear voiceover from Sally as it like cuts back to the coffin being carried, you know, past Adrian and Dan and Dr. Manhattan. And then Lori says, you know, another lesson on time passing. You know, you and John should get together and write a book on the subject. So they completely redid that kind of section. And then there's actually no flashback or reference to the whole rape scene. So we actually get none of that
interesting.
In this section, at least of the script. So yeah, that's really, I mean, there's not much difference because most of this week isn't even in the book. So, or in the script. So not much for script differences this week. So, Jerry, thanks for wrapping up the week with us.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It was my pleasure. I don't know how to say. Pretty sobering minutes, but yeah, I again, I really did. I enjoyed watching the movie, and I really appreciate the invitation. And again, I wouldn't necessarily had come across it without you guys inviting me on. So I do want to read the book, and I'd actually like to watch this again.
Nice. Very cool.
Really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
Of course.
And the whole Jones Boys.
Yeah.
For the whole week.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah,
do you want to just shout out to any you know that other podcast you do?
Oh, that other podcast. Sure, yeah. Sure. What we do what you guys do here for Watchmen, me and two other co-hosts, Tom and Pete, we do the Indiana Jones Minute, where we go through Indiana Jones movies a minute at a time and discuss it in preposterous detail. And you can find that at IndianaJonesMinute.com. And we're already we're about to start The Last Crusade. So
as of this recording,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
By the time this comes out, you guys will, I think, be well underway.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, but the other two, Raiders and Temple of Doom, are already up on the site, and we've gone through those whole damn movies.
Actually, by this time, I bet you're in Italy already.
Yes, we Venice. Are in Italy already. Ah, Venice. Ah. One of my least favorite things of that entire fucking goddamn movie. Ah, Venice. Ah. But you know, maybe other people feel differently.
I think the thing and it's been a long time since I've seen Last Crusade, but I think that part of the movie feels the most James Bond to me, which kind of feels fitting, so.
That, you nailed it. It is. It's very James Bond. And I think that's what I don't like about it.
Oh.
I know that's what I don't like about it. Because Indiana Jones, to me, is not James Bond, and he's nothing like James Bond. Mm. James Bond is slick, and, we know who James Bond is. Sure. He's a British spy. Indiana Jones is dirty and dusty, and he's an American grave robber.
Yeah.
They're just, So it's that. But I do know that there are times the directors, like this James Bond vibe and wanted to give him some James Bond juice.
Yeah.
I just, to me, that falls flat. I don't get that. I don't understand those James Bondy smooth things. For Indiana Jones,
sure.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. If they hadn't put him in that white tuxedo in the beginning of Temple of Doom.
Yeah, and he has kind of these James Bond lines that just they fall flat. You're like, that's not what Indiana Jones would say or how he talks. That's just... That's just my opinion.
Yeah, well, I'm sure
James
you guys
Bond would... can get away with that because he's James Bond.
Yeah. Well, our listeners should definitely check out what you and Pete and Tom have going on over there, and be sure to send us thoughts, comments, questions to WatchmenMinute@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at WatchmenMinute. You can find me on Twitter at @ThatTravisBow. I guess that'll do for this week. But Eric, what else you got?
Just the Facebook page and group. Go and check us out there. It's the group is Crimebusters Listener Society, and find us at Watchmen Minute all over the place.
All right. Well, thanks again, Jerry.
Sure, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Anytime.
So we'll see you for minute 41 next week on Monday. Who watches the Watchmen?
We do. Watchmen are over.